Okay, welcome to the deep dive. We've got quite a stack of sources here, everything from historical deeds, lease agreements, interview notes, research snippets.
Right, we're going to use all of this to really dig into land use, governance, and development there in Shawnee, Oklahoma.
Our mission really is to wade through this material, figure out the history, the legal obligations, what's happening now, how it all shapes Shawnee's land and public resources.
Exactly. And as you dig in, you find some, surprising complexities, things that go back decades.
Yeah, absolutely. We're talking agreements from the 40s impacting things today, like the airport, local ball fields, even city money.
So we're going to unpack some key documents, pull out insights from the research, see how these public assets get managed, and what happens when old agreements meet modern needs. Let's get into it.
Okay, so where do we start? It feels like this 1947 instrument of transfer is kind of the bedrock for a lot of this.
It absolutely is foundational. This document, recorded back in November 47, it's the official paper trail for the U.S. government, the War Assets Administrator, technically handing over a big chunk of land to the city of Shawnee.
And this wasn't just, here you go, it's yours. This land used to be a naval air station, right? So it came with strings attached.
Oh, definitely. Very specific strings. The main one, it had to be used only for public airport purposes. That was the deal.
And beyond just the purpose, there were specific rules, covenants that the city had to follow.
Yes, and they're still relevant. Key things like operated as a public airport reasonably, no unfair discrimination. Critically, no exclusive rights for landing or navigation facilities.
Okay, so keep it public. Keep it fair.
Right. And they had to maintain it, the landing area, buildings, equipment, keep it all in working order.
Did the federal government keep any access rights for itself?
They did. The U.S. government could use the airport with its own planes, itinerant aircraft is the term, up to 25% capacity, basically for free unless they broke something. That goes back to an earlier lease from 43 mentioned in the transfer.
Got it. So public airport use, keep it maintained, government access, no monopolies. What if Shawnee ever wanted to sell and transfer part of it later on?
Ah, that's a huge one. Another key restriction. Any transfer of this airport land needs FAA approval or, whatever agency handles that now.
Okay, and this is where it gets really critical, right? What if the city doesn't follow these rules? What are the stakes laid out back in 1947?
The reversionary rights. This is maybe the most potent part. The document says flat out, if any conditions are breached, the U.S. government can, it's their option, take the land back. Title, possession, everything.
Wow. Even if the city just becomes legally unable to meet the obligations.
Even then, it's a powerful clause. The feds essentially hold the ultimate right to reclaim the property if the original deal isn't upheld.
And the sources confirm the city of Shawnee signed on the dotted line November 20th, 1947, accepting all these terms.
That signature locked them in. And those terms, they echo right through to today's discussions.
Okay, let's jump from 1947 way forward to now. Your sources include comments from Shawnee's current mayor, and he's talking about some pretty big plans for this very same airport land.
That's right. The airport is clearly a major focus for the current administration. They see it as a big driver for economic development and future growth.
And not just keeping the lights on, but a huge expansion, right? Especially that southeast quadrant trying to attract businesses.
Exactly. And there's movement. The sources mentioned the first three design phases for this expansion just got approved. Plus, they secured a $1 million state grant for the airport.
So there's funding, there's planning momentum, and it sounds like demand is already there.
It is. The mayor mentioned waiting lists. Like 50 or 60 people waiting for hangars, maybe 20, 30 businesses looking for space out there. It's busy.
Okay, so you've got demand, you've got expansion plans. What's the bigger strategy here, especially being relatively close to Oklahoma City?
Well, the goal, as laid out in the sources by the mayor, is pretty clear. Make Shawnee the first point of overflow for the business jets and other air traffic that OKC's airports, like Will Rogers, are too full to handle right now. They want to capture that specific market.
Okay, now here's where it gets interesting, right? You have these big plans, maybe even thinking about selling off bits of land not needed for planes. How does that mesh with the 1947 rules about FAA approval for transfers?
Yeah, this is exactly where you see the historical constraints bumping up against modern ambitions. It gets complicated fast.
The mayor mentioned some past land sales from the original airport property.
He did. He recalled areas where a gas station is now, the 66 station, also the Shawnee Little Theater, the early childhood center. He stated these needed FAA approval and got it because, the land wasn't going to be used for flying. like a triangular piece by the highway, for example.
So the understanding is, if it's not for aviation use anymore, you go to the FAA to get approval to sell it.
That seems to be the process as he described it. But here's a fascinating snag the sources point out. If you look at the actual Pottawatomie County Assessor records for 2025, that 80-acre parcel, which includes the pit stop, presumably the gas station area, is still listed as owned by the city of Shawnee.
Wait, really?
Yeah, and the county records provided show no recorded sale history for that specific piece of land.
So the official county property records don't reflect a sale for that parcel, even though the mayor recalled a sale process involving FAA approval for a gas station area.
Precisely. That disconnect is a key finding in the sources. It raises, you know, serious questions about how past transfers were actually documented and finalized legally.
And the mayor himself, according to the sources, admitted some uncertainty about whether all those past sales were properly recorded.
He did acknowledge that. And he also stressed that for any future sale of this land, the Secretary of the Navy's office would likely need to be involved because of the original 1947 contract.
Which just underlines how that federal layer stemming from the Navy's original ownership is still very much in play.
Absolutely. So this idea the mayor floated about maybe selling off land east of Airport Road that's not needed for aviation, well, it runs right into that IoT reality. It belongs ultimately to the U.S. government under those terms.
Meaning FAA approval is needed, which the mayor himself called complex. He even suggested they might need help from federal politicians like representatives or senators to navigate it.
Exactly. It shows how that nearly 80-year-old piece of paper dictates what the city can realistically do today. Now, contrast that with something like the Shawnee Lube lease amendment from 2017.
Right. That seemed much simpler. It was just a lease for, what, about 0.71 acres for around $7,400 a year adjusted for inflation with some basic requirements like landscaping.
Yeah, that's a different animal. Leasing is a contractual agreement for use, not a permanent transfer of ownership governed by that complex federal deed. Much more straightforward, it seems.
Okay. Moving off the airport land itself, but sticking with how the city handles property and finances, your sources bring up Oklahoma Baptist University, OBU.
Right. This provides another angle on how the city interacts with assets that are or were public in some way.
And there's a striking financial point here. The sources highlight a really big gap between the sale price of the university property, just $200,000.
Yeah. And you compare that to OBU earlier, getting a $2 million bond guarantee through a city authority. That came with really good financing rates, a no-compete clause.
So the source's take on this is?
The interpretation presented is that OBU used this public financing tool to get a public asset for, well, way below market value, essentially channeling public-backed funds into their own improvements with what the source sees as very little risk to OBU itself.
That's a huge difference, $200K sale versus a $2 million guarantee. It definitely makes you look twice at how public assets are valued and transferred. And there's more with OBU, long-term lease.
Yes, the OBU 25-year lease. It started way back in November 2002, the rent, just $420
a month. $420
a month
since 2002.
That's what the source states. And the analysis points out that, okay, maybe back in 2002, that represented a reasonable return, maybe around 10% yield on the property value then.
But obviously, property values have gone up quite a bit in over 20 years.
Exactly. The source estimates that by 2025, the market value has basically doubled. So that fixed $420 rent, it now represents an effective yield closer to only 5% of the current value.
Meaning OBU gets the benefit of a long-term, very low rent compared to today's market, and the city is potentially missing out on significant income it could be getting from that asset now.
That's the argument laid out in the sources. They also mention a 2006 bond sale resolution, Resolution 6068. The heady helped facilitate up to $2.8 million in OBU authority refunding bonds. Local banks were involved, expedited provisions, good yields for OBU.
And who was overseeing these kinds of deals back then?
Interestingly, the sources note that oversight for these types of arrangements in 2006 involved the Airport Advisory Board, which had just been put together. So you see different city bodies getting involved in these financial agreements tied to properties.
These examples, the IoT land complexities, the OBU financial situation, they seem to point towards bigger questions about oversight and accountability, right? Especially for facilities the public uses. Your research excerpts really dig into this, particularly with youth sports facilities.
They absolutely do. The research highlights how complicated ownership can be in Oklahoma. You've got city land, federal IoT land like we discussed, tribal land, nonprofits running things. It's a real mix.
And that complexity can lead to problems.
It can. The research points to concerns about financial opacity, like where's the money going, questions about fiduciary duty, who's really responsible for protecting the public's interest, and a general sense that public accountability might be slipping.
The sources mention a lawsuit down in Florida involving USSA as a kind of cautionary tale.
Yeah, it's a settled lawsuit alleging misconduct in youth sports down there. The research frames it as a sign that states like Oklahoma should be paying attention to governance issues.
And bringing it back home to Shawnee, the Lions Club ball fields come up as the specific example.
Right. And critically, those fields are on land governed by the instrument of transfer. So all those federal restrictions we talked about, they apply there too.
And there's been recent stuff happening there, the 2023 tornado damage, city plans for demolition.
Yes. And the source analysis is quite critical. It suggests the city moved towards demolition without really thorough community discussion, potentially ignoring an older commitment to create a regional park there.
Which could be an issue under the IoT?
According to the source, yes. It raises flags about possibly breaching fiduciary duties to the public and potentially violating the IoT terms about the land's purpose and public use. This ties right into that question in your notes about getting the baseball fields back.
And this isn't just a Shawnee issue, is it? Your sources give other examples from around Oklahoma.
They do, showing a pattern. Like the Brian Crawford Memorial Sports Complex, run by a nonprofit, got state grants, but transparency is limited, and the group using it has ties to local city leadership.
Okay. Any others?
The Seminole Softball Quad is mentioned linked to the city, but managed by someone with reportedly close personal ties to city leaders. That raises potential conflict of interest questions, you know, about favoritism.
And even using school land.
Yeah, state school land, which is constitutionally supposed to fund education. The sources describe situations where USSA tournaments happen there based on informal deals by coaches or ADs, sometimes without official approval or clear fee structures.
So private tournaments potentially profiting off land meant for public schools.
That's the concern raised.
Yeah.
That it violates the land's purpose and allows private gain from a public asset. And the sources briefly mentioned Fire Lake ball fields, too, just to show the added complexity of tribal land, sovereign immunity, and limited disclosure.
So if you tie all these threads together, Shawnee's IoT land, these other complexes, what are the big systemic problems the research identifies?
It boils down to a few key things, according to the sources. A serious lack of transparency, especially financially. Potential or perceived conflicts of interest. Real challenges in making sure land use rules are followed, especially on federal land like the IoT property.
Mm-hmm.
And just an overall need for stronger ethical governance and accountability for these community sports facilities that rely on public support.
Okay, so the research paints a picture of some pretty significant challenges across the board. Does it offer any solutions, any way to fix these problems?
It does. The sources lay out a pretty detailed statewide reform framework. It's designed specifically to tackle these failures in oversight and governance that they identified in Oklahoma.
A statewide approach. Okay, what are the main parts of this proposed plan?
First off, a unified facility oversight classification system, or UFOCS. Think of it like a state registry. It would classify every sports facility that gets public support based on who owns it, who uses it, funding, agreements. Just getting a clear picture.
That helps with the transparency problem, right? Knowing what's out there.
Exactly. And then building on that, mandatory annual facility disclosures, AFD. Facilities getting public help but have to file yearly reports. Revenue, expenses, big contracts, who's using the facility, maintenance costs. Put the finances out in the open.
What about those conflict of interest situations, like a city employee running tournaments on city fields?
There's a proposed dual role prohibition and ethics enforcement. Basically, make it illegal for public employees to wear both hats, public manager and private tournament director for the same facility, and set up an independent state office to investigate and enforce it.
Makes sense. And those land use agreements and leases that sometimes seem murky.
The framework calls for lease and use agreement reforms. Things like requiring public approval from, say, city councils or school boards for these deals, mandating open bidding processes, and requiring user groups to get a certificate showing they meet state standards.
And looping back to the federal land, the IoT land.
Yes, a specific point on oversight of federal and IoT lands. It stresses that state and local governments need to work with federal agencies like the FAA to actually enforce the original IoT terms. Encourage cooperation.
Seems like coordinating all this would need a dedicated effort.
Agreed. That's why the framework suggests creating a Youth Sports Integrity Task Force, YSITF,
yeah,
at the state level. Their job would be to audit practices, develop model policies and standards, maybe even draft sample ordinances for cities and counties to adopt.
And how does the average person fit in? How would they find information or report issues?
Through a proposed digital transparency portal, an online public website where you could search facility info, see those annual disclosures, file complaints about violations, and track what happens with those complaints.
So stepping back, the big picture goal here, based on the sources, is really about setting a higher, consistent standard for how these public sports assets are managed across the state.
That's exactly it. Uniform standards for financial responsibility, for following land use rules, including those old federal ones, and clear accountability. The ultimate aim is to restore public trust and make sure these resources are used responsibly for the public good they were meant for.
Okay, let's shift back a bit to the current city administration in Shawnee. Your sources also give us a glimpse into what they're focusing on right now, beyond these specific land use and governance deep dives.
Yeah, they touch on some day-to-day operational things, recent changes, and ongoing projects.
Like the recent city manager resignation. How's the city handling that transition?
Right. The sources indicate the previous assistant city manager stepped up as acting, likely moving to interim, and the planning engineer head became interim assistant manager. The mayor's comments emphasized keeping operations smooth, focusing on capital improvement projects, and expressed confidence in the team.
And speaking of capital improvements, a major theme seems to be basic infrastructure challenges. Sewer lines, water mains.
Absolutely. The sources highlight their poor condition as a critical issue. The mayor's approach, as described, is pretty practical. Fix the utilities under the roads before or during road replacements. Don't just pave over problems you'll have to dig up later.
Smart. Avoid doing the work twice.
Exactly. He also mentioned water pressure problems, even citing OBU having issues, and stressed that better infrastructure is vital for supporting businesses and attracting manufacturers. You need the basics to grow.
Makes sense. What other specific projects are on the city's radar, according to the sources?
A few things. Getting ODOT to replace those I-40 interchange lights that fell was a nice win. Saved the city about $380,000, apparently, because ODOT was already working nearby.
Good timing and coordination there.
Yeah. They're also looking into a possible new I-40 interchange over at Leo Street. The idea is to give heavy trucks a better route, keep them off other city streets.
Traffic management seems key.
It does. Related to that is the AOK Railroad project near Main and Kickapoo. They're planning a gravel yard there, bringing gravel in by train instead of truck. Again, trying to divert that heavy truck traffic from the center of town.
And relationships with other governments came up too.
Yes. The mayor specifically mentioned working on improving relationships with the county commissioners and the local tribal nations, calling them important neighbors.
Were there any hints about business recruitment?
Just a brief mention of confidential efforts, like a Fortune 100 company supposedly looking at Shawnee. Standard economic development background work.
And housing. Anything happening there?
The sources highlight the Chapel Ridge Apartments renovation, a big $4.5 to $6 million project by outside investors. The mayor used this to point out the need for the city to improve its own communication and transparency to help projects like this. Things like providing necessary plans or information quickly, even for small things like a bus shelter needed for the apartments.
So making it easier for private investment to happen.
Right. And finally, just acknowledging that some big projects take time, like the 45th Street widening. It's being done in phases, and the whole right-of-way acquisition process itself can be long and complex. That's just part of major infrastructure work.
Wow. Okay, we have really covered a lot of ground here, pulling from all these different sources. We started with that 1947 document.
The instrument of transfer, yeah. Almost 80 years old, but its rules about airport use, FAA approval, and those reversionary rights are still shaping things today.
And we saw how that history collides with modern plans, like the big airport expansion trying to catch OKC's overflow, and the real knots you get into when talking about selling IoT land, especially with those potential discrepancies between recollections and official county records.
Right. Then we look beyond the airport at governance and financial issues. The Lions Club fields on that same IoT land, the questions around the tornado cleanup and demolition plans.
And how that connects to fiduciary duty and the original federal terms. Plus, the OBU examples, the sale versus bond guarantee numbers, that long-term lease potentially falling way behind market rates.
And the research then showed us this isn't isolated, right? Systemic issues across Oklahoma youth sports facilities, transparency gaps, conflict of interest worries, problems ensuring land use compliance.
Which led directly to that proposed statewide reform framework. The registry, disclosures, ethics rules, oversight task force, transparency portal, a whole system aimed at fixing those problems.
And finally, we touch base on what the city's working on now, managing leadership changes, tackling those crucial water and sewer lines, planning road projects and truck routes, trying to foster better relationships and support development like the Chapel Ridge renovation.
It's really striking how understanding all these pieces from a 75-year-old deed to a lease payment, a bond deal, ball field debates, highway lights, helps make sense of why things happen or maybe don't happen in a community like Shawnee.
Absolutely. Which brings us to a final thought, really. When you consider everything we've unpacked from these sources, the power of those historical federal restrictions on land use, the questions about how accurately past land deals have been recorded, the clear need for better governance and transparency, especially around community facilities. What does it actually mean for a city to truly control its own assets?
Especially assets granted by the federal government with very specific lasting conditions attached.
Exactly. What does responsible stewardship look like when you're trying to balance that weight of history, those legal obligations, with the very real needs and opportunities of today and tomorrow? That's something complex for any community in this situation to grapple with.